Hi, welcome to the Photo Show. Yeah, it was such a success last week. We got such good comments back from everyone. Well, two people anyway, that we thought we'd do it again. So joining me to go through all of the stuff that we got an interesting show lined up because we've got a little bit of a story about copyright, which we'll talk about and explain. And we've got a bit on flash that Martin requested. And we've got an update on Martin's moon photography as well. So. Joining me, same three people. I got to start off with an apology for Damien Walmsley at the bottom, who is not Damien Lewis, which is what I said. After introducing Ian Lewis, I then went to Damien Lewis, and it's not the famous actor. Or the
I've got to say, I don't mind.
It's Damien Walmsley. I'm sorry, Dara.
Easy mistake to make. Look at you know.
Well, it was following on from the Lewis. I just did Damien Lewis in the end. So. Great bunch. How the devil are we, fellas?
All good. All safe and sound, yep.
Had a good week with photography?
Yes.
Yeah.
We've all shot some of it. I know you've shot some of it, Damo, because I've seen it. I know Ian shot it because it's actually behind him right now. And I know Martin has as well because we're going to talk about it in a second.
Yeah, Martin shot behind him as well.
Now, you've enjoyed the bubble photography this week, haven't you, mate?
I wish.
Oh, it's been brilliant.
Yeah. Rat hole. It's a total rat hole, isn't it?
Yeah. It's you think it's something so simple, and then when you take it, you just can't believe what you're seeing on the back of the camera. When you get it, it takes a while to get it right, but when you get it right, it's just it's mind blowing.
And you just look at the bubble and you think, okay, it's just a bubble. And then when you look at the colours that you've captured and the detail that you've captured and
I haven't touched the saturation sliders at all. When you look at that, and it's just mind blowing.
If you can hear the banging in the background, that's the wife taking our latest murder victim and putting them through the blender so that the police can't find the evidence, just so you know. I don't know if it's coming out or not, but there we go. Superb picture, mate. You got some absolute stunners the other night. Welcome to the bubble fold.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to do some drip ones next?
Don't know. I've got a few ideas for bubbles, yeah.
Okay. I've been doing some drip ones, and I've enjoyed my drip ones, I have to say. I'm determined to get a really good quality double drip where the drips collide, but without buying a Drip-O-Matic Splash Acer thing that's Flash Art, whatever it is. I just won't. But I'm not paying 180 quid, so I can get two splashes to collide. There's got to be a way to do it. So,
my researcher back told me we've got our high-speed camera, which I completely forget because I got that in a little compartment that's worked. So we're going to go and have a go at playing with the bubbles on a really big, high-speed professional camera and see what we come up
with. I did shoot some because I could do 240 frames a second on the FS5, so I've got some 240 frames a second bubble motion, and I need to do some splashy motion. So
there's a really good one on YouTube you can go to in zero gravity where they fly a plane. And they actually pierce a bubble at zero gravity, and it is really good. I think you can find it on YouTube. You just find bubble zero gravity collapse, and it's a really good watching how the bubble symmetrically. Well worth it.
Okay.
You're just dropping in fluid, or could you drop something like a pea or something like that in? Would that make a difference of the effect?
The pee wouldn't come back out again like splashes do, where it pops back up again. And the thing that's nice about the double splash is the fact that when you drop a different colour in, that actually forms the crown and the splash out. So it's I've done one with red and green, and you've got this milky red substance at the bottom, but the green is splashing back out at the top. If you dropped a pee in, you'd just get you'd get a bigger crown because it would be a bigger object than the drip, and then the splashback would be of the same colour fluid though. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to give it a try.
You just need to find
Ian, and you said glycerin was the trick, wasn't it? You were saying in the chat.
Generally speaking, with water, if you do anything with water, glycerin is usually a help. So, if you've got something that's sloping and you want to try and get a piece of, a droplet of water to grip to it, a plant or something like that, or a leaf. You've got glycerin in the water, it'll hold on because it's a thicker, gooier substance. When you come to dropping water into stuff, I would put the glycerin in the drop, but I wouldn't put it in the receiving because that'll just make it thick and gloopy and it won't splash back. So,
My grandson left a bubble solution, so that's what I used.
Yeah. Yeah, bubble solution is good. You're at 1-3 ratio. Is that what you did, Ian?
Yeah,
one soap and three water.
Free water, one soap, and then half a part of glycerin, like that.
I just put a teaspoon in, something like that. It works okay.
And how are you creating the bubble? With a straw or something? Or?
Yeah, just blow very gently. Takes a bit of practice, but once you've done it a few times, you get the hang of it. And with the glycerin, the bubble holds for a while. You get a good few minutes before, depending on what the atmosphere of the room is like and how warm it is, the bubble will hold for a little while, and you get a few minutes of shooting. Yeah, but the different thing in colours is, the bubble almost starts off clear, and then all this reaction starts happening. And when the holes like up here, that's when the bubble's starting to break up. And you get more and more holes when it gets closer to the point of...
Well, I think there's dust contamination, because you did the same thing as me. I used the back cap off the lens, and that seemed to be the best receptacle for blowing the bubble. But I think that's dust contamination that causes those.
From the shots I've taken, I found that I get more black spots towards the end of the life of the bubble.
Right.
Almost like the surface of the bubble starting to fail.
Hmm. And then I was looking with interest about your lighting rigs, about how you're lighting straight down.
Well, I was actually, I had a white piece of foam core, and I was actually firing the speed light up to the white piece of foam core, and which was then reflecting the light back down. Because I don't have a boom arm, so I didn't have an easy way of getting the softbox straight over the bubble.
I rested mine on some books. We got my grandmother's encyclopedias in the front room, and I piled three of those and just put those on the corner. And then I put a piece of paper across the ones that were over the bubble as well, though. So I had to, every time I blew the bubble, I had to build the thing back up, because the paper helped diffuse the flash, because otherwise you get like a pinpoint in the bubble that you can't get rid of. So you will need a bit of solution for that, though, Dano, because the bubbles don't last very long if it's just soap and water.
Quite good, because your lens cap kept them over there quite nicely, and it worked quite well.
It did work well. Right, Martin, enough of the chit-chat and the preamble. We're going to look at based on last week's conversation, we're going to look at your moon photos. It's very brave of you to show them, mate. Well done. So starting us off then, there's the first one. Now, if you're using the 70 to 200, you are a long way away there, so you're going to get a bit of fuzziness anyway, pal.
Yeah, I was surprised that I wasn't getting a stronger image. It was taken in the morning, early in the morning, and the moon was fairly near the horizon. It was quite a large moon in the sky, but the 200 only gives me that kind of, it's a tiny little shot, so... By the time you zoom in on it, then I think it's losing a lot of the definition.
So are you trying to focus manually there, or are you on auto?
Yeah, no, I tried both. I was using manual with the autofocus assistance. You know, when you're getting it right,
it beeps.
So I tried a couple with that, and then I switched to auto. And I also, on the 200, it's got two different settings for the focus area. One's a 1.4 to infinity, the other's 2.5 meters. So I set it to the longer setting and tried to get the
well, that shouldn't make any difference.
And I also tried your trick about manually focusing and then coming back a little bit to turn on the ring to so it wasn't right over hard against infinity setting.
Yeah.
So I still couldn't get that absolute focus. So one of them, as you see, that the...
Well, you've lost that one first. That's a given. You've definitely lost that one. The second one...
What are you looking at? What are you showing them on you? And is it on...
They're on the... They should be on the feed. You should be seeing it.
Oh, on the feed. Right, okay.
Yeah. But the second one, you've got an awful lot better. So that's heavily zoomed in, and the detail there is about as much as I'd expect.
So what are you looking at? What are you showing them?
You need to mute yourself, guys.
But the second one, you've got an awful lot better.
Guys, you've got to mute yourself if you're going to look at the feed.
It's heavily zoomed in, and the details there is about as much.
Okay, so if you're going to look at the feed, make sure you mute yourself before you do. But the that one there is about as good as you would probably get with the 70-200. I've zoomed in horrifically there. The thing I would say about shots of the moon that are like that, Martin, is more often than not, you will get, I think that having something that's an iconic part of something in a sea of blackness actually shows just how small the moon is, how far away it is, how big the expanse of space is, that kind of stuff. So actually kind of just grabbing this and letting it go off to one side perhaps of the image, so it's, you know, say over here or something on the framing, so you've got the third point there and the quality of distance between the top and the side, that would look kind of good, or even just center. But I don't think you've lost out on the focus on that one. And this one, I think, is probably the best of the three, 9384. You've actually got some quite stark detail there in the line of the shadow look. But again, that's about as much as I'd expect with the 70-200 on its own. So
and you said that I could easily put a 2x extender on there.
Well, you've got more than enough light with the moon. That's the thing to remember, is you've got a reflection of the sun there. So you know, you could
put,
you could probably, if you were handy with your hands, you could probably still get a low ISO f/11 and still shoot it. But there's no point. I mean, f/4 is plenty.
Yeah. The nice thing about that, I think the last one, you actually see that large crater just on the
horizon line. Yeah.
That wasn't quite that was quite, I'm quite happy with that. So yeah, more practice. As I say, keep practicing. But yeah, I might invest in, rather than trying to buy a 400mm lens or something like that, I might invest in a converter.
Now, have you got a telescope?
No.
If you own a telescope, the one thing that you should be getting is a T2 mount for it, and that allows you to put a Canon T2 screw mount onto it, and then you can look straight through the viewfinder directly onto your sensor. And then you're focusing then off the back of your camera, so on the view screen, and you'll find that incredibly easy then. And you won't fail. I've shot a video of the moon with my FS5 screwed onto the Skywatcher, and it's I'll see if we can find it before we go, but it's come out well, really, really well. Those aren't bad, mate. That's not the horror show that you described last week.
Yeah, but yeah, they've certainly been nothing I've done before, you know. But yeah, no, it's a lot of good tips, and I'll work on that until I get it right. But yeah.
That's good. It's all right.
Thank you.
So you asked a question last week about flash. So let's have a little general discussion about what flash is doing for us or not doing for us, and how much we use it, whether we don't use it, what we use it for, how we go about doing it. Do you use flash, Martin, much?
Yes. One of the little jobs I do is my wife's organisation. They have an event where all the schools take part, and they've asked me to photograph their stand, their display stand with the people in it. So normally it's in halls and venues. So I've been using my Canon flash on the camera, but it's so inconsistent. Some of the photographs I take, it's too slow a shutter speed, so the people are moving, the blur. Others, all the faces are wiped out. I'm trying to get that balance between the show stand and the people, and then also I'm getting some areas, I'm getting a lot of backlight coming into the picture, and it just seems to send all the exposures all over the place.
So what's
this? Pop-up flash or speed light?
It's a speed light mounted on the top of my, I've got a 6D, and I've got a Canon speed, I've got the 450EZ flash? The Canon.
So what are you setting the camera up on? You've got the camera set on all full auto.
I've tried using full auto. I've tried using a 60th of a second, and then balancing the flash gives me an indication on the ETTL exposure.
That's through the lens metering, yeah.
So I try and use that as a thing, and then I bracket these days because I only get one shot at this. I tend to take half a dozen. 10 shots and try and bracket it slightly up and down to make sure I've got one good one. And I try and use on the flash unit, I set it to 45 degrees and use the white flash card on the top, so it's not pointing.
Yeah, that's good.
If I point it directly at the people, it just, everyone gets white. The exposure usually on the faces is too strong.
So, the first thing I would say is that generally speaking, if I use flash at an event, I'll try and stick to, because if you're at a village hall, you'll probably find that the lighting's fairly consistent in the hall. It's when you go outside that you'll have a problem where it'll change.
Yep.
So I would look for an exposure in the hall, shoot a couple of test shots before anyone comes in, at the average range that you're probably going to shoot them. So if you're going to shoot a table of five people, you're going to probably want to be 10 feet back. So I would shoot that exposure as an example for myself to get a manual level, and then I would just repeat that, and I would make sure that I don't get closer than that 10 foot.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So then I've got a consistency to it. The other thing that you can do with flash, I think that there's two rules with flash. You're either adding light or you're using it for an artistic effect. So you're using it to provide depth to your image. And anything that's camera mounted is going to be just adding light, nothing more. It's not adding depth to the image because it's flattening everything by the process. So with that, I would probably look at maybe going to the exposure. I could probably get away with up to about 800 ISO with the camera, just shooting that without worrying about adding light. And then I'll just back it off a little bit and let the flash add a tiny bit more just to kind of enhance and accept the fact that it's going to be a grainy image that will look a bit paparazzi, you know, local press kind of feel to it. That's my thoughts.
Okay.
You're on mute, Damo. Hang on, unmute. You're okay, go.
You can get some nice attachments like a bulb, but I mean, I also bounce the flash as well. Bouncing is very good. If you've got a nice white ceiling above you, that helps a great deal. And I've got some nice attachments, magnetic attachments that clip on, like a bulb, a cone, and those really help as well to diffuse the light.
Right. Usually in the halls and stuff like that, the ceiling is 12, 14 foot. It's not a low ceiling. So that's why I try and use the bounce attachment on the actual flash gun. Because I certainly find if I turn it straight down 90 degrees at the people, it tends to overexpose. So, and the other thing is I'm using a zoom lens, so I turn, like you say, I try and get to one position.
I don't get my attachments
to frame however wide I need to get. Some teams only like might be two or three, others there might be six of them, and getting them all screened together. So, yeah.
Any words of wisdom, Ian?
Yeah, I think it all do play. I think my experience with flash is it does tend to overexpose. So, if you're not comfortable to come away from TTL, that's not a problem. But I would, if you're sticking with TTL, I would just dial in maybe a stop under exposure, because it'll be easier to lift those images a little bit rather than, you know, if someone's face has gone white.
You blow them out, you're done.
Tendency to underexpose a little bit. The other thing you've got to remember is it's a small light source, and if you're sticking it on top of the camera and you're blasting it straight at, you know, at this level, it's only going to look, you know, so good. Then you're talking about trying to get the light off of the camera, and that's getting a little bit more technical.
I bought one of these, which are quite light, and
hang on, hold it up again, Damien. A little bit more time yet. Yeah, that kind of stuff's good.
Magmon. It's very nice. It goes on my 430, and I particularly like this attachment. It clips on like that. Okay. And the magnetic thing, it's got a magnetic side to it, clips on, and that's quite nice for, usually for family and that, because I can get a nice picture. There's another attachment. This is a bit floppy. That attaches on. But that's, you see, it's a little bit floppy, that one. I find that one a bit awkward to carry around. And then it's got a nice set in there as well, which I've used for my bubble photography. It's got a little grid attachment as well. And there's some coloured flash bits as well that you can add in. So there's a set of coloured bits. I find it very good. So you've got some nice colours to put in. But this one, particularly the dome, works very nice, Martin. It just clips on, and then and I just have it straight up, and it gives a very nice diffuse action to it. And you can just buy this by itself with attachments. It's like a little ring around it that you put onto the flash. I quite like those.
Ian, you used a kind of was it like a Velcro soft spread at the wedding when you
that was like a almost a V shape, wouldn't it? And that just, yeah, that just that sets on the flash. All that does is give a wider spread of light. Because as I was saying, you're talking about a small light source, which smaller light sources are going to give you harsher shadows. So just by trying to make that light a little bit bigger, you just a better quality of light, softer light.
Yeah.
There's a thing that I've reported on a couple of weeks ago called the Rogue Flashbender. If you put that into Amazon, it's basically the kind of thing that Dano's talking about there, but it actually comes as a soft fabric thing. And I got an imitation of this from eBay, and it cost me a tenner for two of them, and they were dirt cheap Wacker filters. Oh, $12.99, sorry, on Amazon. And they came within a day. One's got like a claw mechanism that you can fold it over, and the other one's just a straightforward, exactly what Darren just showed me, the floppy high thing, but it's just cloth made, and it just folds on with Velcro. And I got a cap on the end, like a diffuser cap years ago, which worked really, really well as well.
What kind of speed do you shoot at? Can that vary depending on?
No, flash. So if I'm in the studio, I will probably nearly always shoot at 1/125th or 1/60th. I won't vary that, and I tend to stick to that with flash. Those are the two main flash speeds. You'll go once you get over 1/200th, you'll start to get flash sync issues, so you'll get the image cutting off sections because the flash hasn't strobed at the right time for the scan of the sensor. But generally speaking, 60th and 1/125th are the two speeds that I've used.
Right, because that'll cut out the blur of movement of the object.
60th, if you had a model who had a fan blowing in their face and you want to capture a little bit of motion in the hair, 1/60th would do that, 1/125th would freeze it. So that's the separation for me, is whether I want to capture any motion or not.
Right. Okay, good. Yeah, because often I don't want to capture motion because they keep moving. You've got three, you know, it's like when you're trying to take a picture of three or four people, one of them is always blinking or moving or looking the wrong way or whatever. It's quite frustrating.
Yeah, I think when you're shooting people with flash, you've got to be careful because, as I say, anything that's camera mounted is going to flatten the image. It's going to make everything very pale and very flat. And it doesn't matter even if you get it correctly exposed, it will still flatten the image because you're shooting everyone face on. My personal view is that, number one, when you're shooting a person with a flash, you should only ever have one source of light for them as a dominant point. If you want to put a key in light in or a snoot to highlight hair or just to give some framing to them, I don't have a problem with that. But the person has got people are a collection of cylinders. I've got cylindrical fingers, I've got a cylindrical head, I've got a cylindrical body, I've got cylindrical arms. And once you've taken a person, an image of a person as a portrait, they have to look like a cylinder at the end of it. And if you then start to add multiple sources of light, you're flattening the cylinder so everything's exposed evenly. You've got to have light and shade on a person, on one side or the other. So flat on doesn't work. I would say that if you're thinking about flash, you're either doing it for extra light or you're doing it for art. And if you're doing it for art, you've got to look at off-center lighting. You've got to look at subtlety with your lighting as well, and probably drawing down on your lighting. And then you've got to think about, if I am adding extra light, then it's coming from a different source, or it's lighting the backdrop up only as a filler to it. Ian, you've been taking some pictures with your daughter. What's the kind of setup that you've had there for?
Yeah, typically one light, and I might, might introduce a reflector if I've got the light to the side of my daughter. I might introduce a reflector just to lift the shadows on the one side slightly. But yeah, I think you want some sort of shadows in there, like you say.
Yeah, so you look at Ian's picture there straight away now, and as I'm looking at it, he's what would be the right side of his face, unless it's flipped, is illuminated, and the left side is a lot darker. And people have to have that three-dimensional element to them, otherwise it's just an utterly lost picture.
I always think window light is lovely, but of course in a crowded room you can't have that, but that's a really nice light to get hold of.
Yeah.
The light's hard to capture. It's I've spent a lifetime of screwing images up with light. I've gone out with a flash gun on top of my camera, and I've come away and thought, holy crap, I did a friend's wedding for it, and it was just like, I really haven't got these, and they were over the moon with the images, and I was beating myself up over them because I was like, oh, God, I've really overexposed that. I haven't got that right at all. Lighting's hard. But I've got to the point definitely. Now where it's as Yozine was saying last week, you know, he's doing the thing with his daughter and he's picking the exposure straight away almost. And I go down, I turn my white room on and people go, oh, what should we put setting on the camera? Okay, £25 an hour for a camera lesson, but here you go, F10. And off you go. Off you drop.
Yeah, flash is hard. It's a hard skill to master. And I think there's a lot of photographers out there that will go, I use natural light. And I think that's really them saying that, you know, admitting that flash is hard, yeah.
So I think the other thing is as well, in understanding any kind of light, whether it's outdoors or particularly with flash, because it's controllable, is the inverse square law. So if you double the distance of your subject to flash, then you'll quarter the energy of the flash without changing any of the controls on it. So any radiant energy will do that, light particularly. So if I've got my white room on, I will set someone up and bring them to the front of the white room. I will put the lights at the back to illuminate the white space up to full. And then I will stick an umbrella up that reflects towards them to diffuse the light. And I will take a picture. And at that point, then I'm trying to decide whether I've got that light turned up far enough to balance the back ones. Now, I'm not going to dim the back ones ever. They're going to be at full power regardless because I want to burn that white space out. So then what I'm thinking about is, okay, if I've got this light and it's actually at full blast, then instead of worrying about that or changing the settings on the camera, because the settings on the camera won't help me with what's at the back because it will still burn out, and then I'll start to burn out the sides of the head as well as the light reflecting forwards comes back onto them. So what I do then is move the subject light twice the distance away, and I've moved that effectively two stops then at that point because it's quarter energy, half of a heart. And that's the key part of lighting, is understanding how the lighting works in terms of the fact that it's not all about running it in the camera. It's about physically gaffering the lights and moving them physical distances to make the light change.
I played around a rear curtain flash. I can't remember how I got the settings, but if I get it right, that can give a very nice effect as well.
I mean, there's loads of stuff you can do. I mean, the back illumination, I've shot girls in front of sheets when they were doing ballet poses years ago, and they had light behind them, and there was no light in front. It was complete silhouette against it. There's tons of stuff that you can do with light. You just got to learn to play with it, and you've got to learn how it works. But generally speaking, people will go to the camera to change the way the exposure looks, and actually probably what they need to do is change the position of the lighting, and that will do them just as much with the camera settings unchanged. Inverse square law, double distance, quarter energy. You've got to know that, otherwise you can't control light.
Right. Might be a quiz question for that one, Martin.
Well, I'll get that right. That's one thing I do get.
We all will now. That should be ingrained. So, yeah, okay.
I mean, Ian's doing this thing at the moment. We're doing the macro thing at the moment. There's no reason you can't play with that. You know, physically, if you've got a light on a stand, double the height of the stand or... you know, start close by and then double it up and just see at the same level what it does. And as the thing to remember is that your stops are half. So double the distance of the light and you're quartering the energy, therefore it's two stops on the light, plain and simple. It's that balance thing that we talked about last week.
Yeah. And the crucial thing is only alter one thing at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said to you last week with the seesaw, if you're on auto or on the P mode, then everything is being decided for you and you don't learn anything in the process. So you've got to load up one side of the seesaw and see what balances it off on the other side.
Yeah. I'm enjoying Ian's 52-week project. I mean, I've got none of my subjects around the house at the moment except Sandy, and she's not too keen having a photograph taken. But my daughters and grandchildren are willing subjects. And I'm getting some ideas from that 52 project to look to see how you could do other poses, other ways forward. So it's a good thing to drop in on that project. It's very nice.
So have you got any grandchildren that have left like a Star Wars doll there or something like that, Emma?
I do Lego, but Lego is really tricky because it's so shiny and it throws back a reflection at you quite a lot.
Yeah, get yourself a mannequin dummy or something like that and put that in, and then set it in one location, set the camera in the same location, and then instead of changing the camera or the subject, move the light. and you'll see the, you know, underneath, from the above, from side, as you rotate it around. We talked last week about training, if you like, and learning and practicing. Sit a camera, sit a, two static objects down, your camera and the subject, and then take a picture, rotate the light, take a picture, rotate the light, take a picture, take, and so on, until you see the effect that it does and the changes that it makes to the subject. But always one set of light if you're talking that you're photographing something cylindrical as a person. Cool. Okay. There's loads to play with flash, mate. You've just got to play with it, and then you'll find out what's right. And think about then bouncing it, diffusing it. There's loads of techniques that you can use. I've got some little canisters that I put on the end. If I'm going out to shoot and I don't want to take a softbox with me because I'm traveling on the tube or something like that, I've got these little bulkheads that are actually Bowens fits that go on that are for actually holding something else. But I went down to B&Q and I found some bulkhead lights that were £10 and I ripped the opals off those and stuck them on and screwed them on. I've got one in the other room actually. I'll get it while we're talking about the next bit. The other thing then we talked about talking about was copyright. So do you guys, are you bothered about copyright? Because the story is that a judge has ruled in the US that a girl put a picture on Instagram. She was approached by Mashable to use the image and she refused. So Mashable went to Instagram and Instagram gave them a sub-license for it. She then sued Mashable for misuse of it and she's lost in court because she hadn't realised that she'd signed away her license agreement to Instagram for it.
Yeah, that's a problem with Facebook as well. She's going to be ready for it. And
the worst two are Facebook and Instagram because they're the same company, Zuckerberg, for a start, and they are merciless about the ownership of photography. If you stick anything on Facebook and Instagram, you've lost it. It's gone, absolutely. Flickr are an awful lot better because they will let you have restricted rights on your own images. They don't say that it's automatically theirs.
I put Creative Commons on my Flickr, and people can come and talk to me about the Creative Commons license I put on, non-attributed.
Yeah, that's brave. I would say I probably want my name on it, but yeah, the you can actually put rights restricted. Is that the word I'm looking for? Effectively, like a licensed image on Flickr as well, and they'll honour it. You absolve them of them publishing it on their site, obviously, because otherwise they'd be in real trouble. But they don't sell it on, which is good. But Instagram and Facebook are merciless. I don't
post think. I think water. You see a lot of photographers using watermarks and stuff. I mean, I used to do it myself, but I think it's almost a pointless exercise because I've had images stolen where they just crop them out or clone them out. Someone wants to steal it, they'll steal it. Yeah. So I think you just got to be cautious what you put up in the first place.
Don't put anything up you don't want to lose on social media. Mm. Plain and simple. I don't like putting I don't like people that put their name on and stuff like that, or they've got this shitty signature that they put on. Nothing screams amateur trying to be professional than signing your photos. It's awful. Don't do it.
Some people do like
it. It's nice to be recognised. I took a picture of my daughter in, she belonged to dance gallery, and it was a dancer down. I took a really nice picture, really good picture. And I showed it to the woman who ran it, and she said, oh, that's very nice, thank you. And then the following year, the poster for their new show, there's my picture on the poster. And, you know, not a thank you or a byword or anything. But she just used it. Now, okay, my daughter came running and said, oh, Dad, look, your picture's on the poster that's going all around the place. And you kind of go, oh, great, nice to be chosen. Then, well, hang on, you could have at least asked or at least said, pictured by Martin or something like that. And it was, and when I went to see her about it, she said, oh, I thought you'd just given it to me so I could use it.
Well, so I think you're being a bit churlish there as well, though, Martin, because I'd agree with her to a degree on that point. So Ellis has got a local, he's at a school doing performing arts. And every time there's a production on, I say, I'll come and do the photos for you. So I go up during the dress rehearsals, I'll take some pictures of the thing going on, and then they use those for the programs for the main night. Now, I'm donating my time free of charge there. So when I give her the images for the programs, if she then starts using them all and sundry in every other location possible, I wouldn't care. because I donated my time. There wasn't a contract of, well, if I donate my time, you have to do the following. But equally, I'm merciless. If someone says to me, I'm using an image, and I'm like, well, you haven't asked me to use that image. I haven't published that anywhere where you could have stolen it, and I could have expected it to be stolen. So here's a bill for 150 quid. Then I do that, absolutely, because that's not – so I do a lot of work on the railway, and periodically I'll get like a cover on Rail Engineer or something like that, or there'll be an internal story where it'll be covered. But that's different because I've sold those images to the company who have paid me to shoot on that day, and where they choose to use them in stories to promote themselves, I figure that's covered by my license to them. Yeah. If they then say, well, actually, Giesmar want to use it for publishing a calendar at the end of the year, bollocks, you're not having that. Sorry, man. You can't give my license away to other people to make promotional needs, but as long as it's promoting you and your service and you paid me, then that's fine by me.
Yeah,
do what you like.
I can understand that being pretty professional. I said it was just, I just thought it would have been just nice if she'd actually either asked or thanked me or whatever. But just to take it, use it, and that.
No, you can't get away from common courtesy. I'm totally with you on that one. But if you give something away, then you give it away.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
I mean, Darren, you've been published on the BBC. You're the most published photographer here, I would have said.
No, I'm not. I'm not looking for money at the moment. I have done possibly.
I was going to say, because if you are, you're doing it the wrong way, man.
I do it for enjoyment. I do it for really enjoyment and personal pleasure. But I think I've been chatting to the guy who does my web, and he's very successful at selling T-shirts and prints and various things. And he reckons he's going to start looking at my back catalogue and putting the pictures on an Instagram site to sell them off on screen prints and different sort of paraphernalia. And they seem to be these little cottage industry sites starting up, which I thought I might have a go at that.
I can put you in touch with a guy that does corporate boxes at Blues and Villa and some of the rugby clubs and that kind of stuff, and also does canvases. I know Ian's, you guys have seen the Ian's canvas that's in my lounge, the surfer.
I think I saw it. Yeah. I saw it yesterday.
Yeah. So that, I mean, it's a stunning image. I love that image. It's super. And I sent that to a guy called Dave. He owns a company called Precision Imaging, and he does fine art canvases, and they're brilliant quality, and they're all in spruce as well. Wow. They're really, really good. But he as soon as he saw the image, he was like, "Would this guy want to sell this image?" So did he ever contact you, Ian?
No, he didn't.
All right, I'll have a word. Mm-hmm. But Damien, he's only in Kingsley, so I can put you in touch, and you can go in and show him your portfolio, and he'll sell them for you, and you get a cut. And he's all right. He's a nice enough bloke. He's known.
Yeah, so I've used Precision Imaging quite a bit, and they're really nice.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, I've used them for. I've made little cards on my pictures to give.
You should have told me that you'd used him, mate, because I could have got a referral out of that from your local networking
group. Well, last time I used them, I'll let you know, because I've used them a couple of times.
Just say, you do know that Ewan's the one that put me onto you.
Okay, I'll do that then.
Do that. Okay.
Good.
And I can back catalogue all of the referrals to him that he owes me, and he can give me all the things
and
business.
And take a cut and et cetera, et cetera.
No, I don't get a cut. I just get the kudos for having sent you, that's all. Yeah, long and the short of it is if you've got when you take an image, you hold copyright. The person that presses the shutter is the person who holds the copyright. So if you get an ape to press the shutter, then the ape technically holds the copyright. But that's a massive case, by the way.
You get into the things that people own the copyright of the buildings you're taking the picture of.
Well, that's the word I'm looking for. So if you take a picture of a statue, you don't own that picture of that statue, they do, because they had the copyright on the art presentation, yeah. But there are ways around that. So, for example, if you're saying that you publish something as an act of reportage, then that has a massive leeway on it. So I took a picture of, say I went down to the local Jaguar factory and I took a picture and the Spitfire... the Spitfire statue was in it,
yeah.
And it was published as part of an article about Jaguar. there is absolutely nothing that they could do because there is no breach of copyright because it's about a reporting and it's in a public space. But if I shot it and then I tried to sell the image as a canvas, yeah, I'd have real problems there. But reportage is a big leeway in terms of that.
And I thought if it's in a public place, you can photograph.
Oh, you can photograph anything that's in a public space, but you can't do anything with the image thereafter. So you have no license, you have no release from the architect to then allow it to be sold as a further image. You can't make money from it, but you can keep it for yourself. That's not an issue. So so the one thing, I used to make a lot of money out of stock imaging. I make zero now. But it's too much of a competitive business, and the images, my images when I first started registering, I was one of 800,000 images on a website called Alamy. Now there are over 130 million images on Alamy. So it's just like, it's impossible to be found. But every time I sent a picture in of something that was architecturally significant, I always got a question back about whether I had a release from the architect or not. And if I hadn't, then they used to market for reportage, and that was it.
And then if you take pictures of people, they have the copyright of it?
No. You still hold the copyright of the image, but they you can't make money from their image. So you can't sell that image, particularly if it's a famous person, you absolutely can't. If they, under GDPR as well, technically speaking, they're allowed to have the image removed.
So that's right.
You can keep it for yourself, but you can't publish it anywhere. And if you do publish it anywhere, they can ask you to take it down. And they're also saying that if you've got a model to sign a model release, then they can take away their release from you, regardless of whether you've even paid them or not. And I think that's one that's going to have to go to the High Court to be tested. Because if you've paid 150 quid to spend a day with a model or something to do some fashion stuff for you for a specific purpose, say Pretty Polly or a beautician's or something like that, and then they sign a model release for that money, that's a contract, and then they can say that they can remove that contract because of GDPR. I think GDPR was never looking to try and control that kind of thing, so I think that's going to be a real interesting test case because I can't see that holding up because the contract would override it, I would have thought. But technically speaking, they can say, sorry, I remove my right for you to use that, and you can't stop me under GDPR.
That was one of my news items I was going to talk to you about, is that Digital Camera talking about doing studio shoots over FaceTime. So if you do studio shoots over FaceTime, that some photographers are doing, technically, Facebook will have the copyright.
Not on the finished image, because they haven't got the finished image. They would claim copyright on the video, but they can't claim copyright on the finished image, no, because they haven't got it. Yeah, it's a bit of a minefield, and the long and the short is don't shoot anything you don't want to keep. If you check it out on the net, anything that you shove up on Instagram, it's gone.
Oh, somebody's asking who's the guy with the shaved head on the questions. I don't know who it is.
Cheeky bastards.
Well, as long as you can ask for the tall forehead, we're okay.
No, I said I needed a haircut. My daughter offered to do it. We had a rock, paper, scissors. I lost. She did it. So I figured this was the least offensive thing that I could have done, and it would grow. So September, this will be back out. I'm not thinning out or anything. I've got the bees or anything here. I'm doing okay, but I'm thinking about going back to the wood, getting a shaver out on it, and just taking it right back and seeing what that looks like. But at the moment, I'm wearing a hard hat, so on a construction site, because we've got cameras out, so come Sunday, that'll be finished. And then there's no way I'm putting a hard hat in on a hot day with a freshly shaved scalp. That'll just be a recipe for each disaster. If you've got a question, send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. It doesn't matter whether we're doing the real photo show or whether we're actually just doing this kind of banter, which I've got to say I've really enjoyed the last 2 weeks. It's been excellent. We'll get it answered and we'll get it talked about, and we'll sort it all out for you. Just send us in a question, britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, market photo show, and we'll get it included in either the show with the show notes and the stories or in the round robin. We're definitely going to try and do one of these a month regardless anyway, so this will continue.
Where I was going to talk, go on, mate. How much Ian got me fired up to do the Star Trail, because I really do enjoy
it. Yeah, I saw your Star Trail. It was good.
Yeah, it's good fun. I hadn't realised how much good, a lot of time to do it, but not that difficult to actually, when I think about how, it's just the process of going for it, but thanks, I fired me up.
That's very good.
Still hear me?
No, I can't hear you.
Oh, I keep getting a message that says that it's gone, but then it's back.
You're back.
The hair's gone, but nothing else.
Oh, the brain's gone with it, mate. The brain has gone with it completely. I've lost all my strength as well. Ian, where can we get a hold of you, buddy?
IanLewisPhoto.co.uk. All the social media links and stuff are there. So.
Excellent, mate. Come on, mate. You've got it. Keep inspired. Keep on with us on the
macro
challenge.
I'll be doing some more bubbles over the weekend or something.
Good. Oh,
and then you've got to get some drips.
You've got to do some drips.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Damo, are you doing drips or are you on bubble still?
I'm not quite sure what I'll do over the weekend, actually. Well, I'm doing something on Flickr. I could do some pinhole photography. So I might make myself a little card of a hole in and try some pinhole photography.
Damo spending the weekend taking shit images.
I might go back to bubbles.
Ian's son's turned up and I just said...
Harry,
he can't hear me, though. He can't hear me, son.
No, he can't hear.
And I'm at DamienWormsley.com.
Excellent, and you're not Damien Lewis, as I originally said. And Martin, where would you be?
We can either get me on Elmug, or on the Slack Room Magic Man, or on the Quiz Night. If you want to come and join in with the Quiz Night?
Yes, Thursday night Quiz Night. You've got to join the Slack Room to get all the information, but come and join the Slack Room, and you can do the BTN Quiz every Thursday night, and it's brilliant. We won last night.
We had a good laugh.
Our arses kept the week before.
Yeah, so that's where you'll find me.
Excellent. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.